podcasting to you from the mega city metropolis of Toronto. You're now entering the Cave of Solitude. Welcome back, everybody. I am your host, Eric Anthony, and finally rejoining us in the cave after a brief hiatus is everybody's favorite co-host. Stand and state your name, little lady.
Lady J.
Welcome back. You know, you've always said to me, Eric, don't apologize. Be proud of who you are. Like, don't go on the show and feel sorry for stuff. But when you're not here and people start asking for you, I gotta apologize to the audience that Dab J has been missing, because people ask for you. I even get notices on Facebook and Instagram and on the website being like, you know, just say hi to Lady J, let her know that this made me laugh, or when she said this, I almost crashed my car because it was so funny. Like, it actually happened.
It really happened.
It really happened. Yeah. And the last couple of episodes have been great. Like, I love going to Cyber City Comics and hanging out with the guys. It's been so much fun being able to do the comic talk, but people ask for you. So I gotta let everyone know Daph J
is in the building. I'm back, baby.
She's back. And we're a couple of episodes away from episode 50, which is pretty epic that we've made it that far, which is good.
It's a fat number.
We're here to stay. So episode 50 should be a pretty big one. Pretty important one, and we'll let's not give away what we're going to talk about, because
it's a surprise.
It's a surprise.
It's That's a sorpresa. Right. Sounds like a soup.
So Dab J, help the people catch up to what you've been up to, what you've been doing. Talk to your fan base.
Oh my goodness, I have a hobby.
You make it seem like it's an accomplishment in life to finally find a hobby. Okay.
Okay, because you know what? I have people sometimes ask me, like, oh, what are your hobbies? And, like, what do you like to do for fun? And it's like, what are you talking about?
I've heard you answer those questions, and I've been like, oh my gosh, what is she saying?
Yeah, like,
they're going to think she's crazy.
I don't know what to say. So everybody that has been following the cave knows that I like to take pictures.
Right.
I'm like a freelance photographer.
On the side for fun.
On the side for fun, you know, capturing moments kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, and like, you know, I'll ride a bike. I like tennis. I like tennis. Okay. I picked up tennis last summer.
Okay.
I'm
okay.
So on okay. That backhand.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
It's not just made
it's
to
a,
like,
no, it's a true, it's
slap
a true,
someone
it's a
anymore.
Story.
It's like functional.
It actually messed me up, because playing, as we're learning to play and figuring things out, I see you're all about the power, like the kill shot. And it kind of makes the game not so fun, because sometimes it's too much power. So when I suggested to Daph J, like, try hitting it like this, just like a backhand like that. And she made it seem like the most impossible thing in the world to put the racket in that direction.
Because it's awkward, because it's almost like you're hitting it backwards. But you are hitting it back. Like,
well,
it's
backhand. Yeah, right.
So it felt like, you know, the elbow was going in the wrong direction. It was just a very...
And
it was a new feeling.
I regret teaching you that, because it messed me up for the rest of the day, because you had me on my toes. I was... And these little chip shots, little backhands. I'm like, what the heck is this?
See, for me to have gotten it that quick, that's a testament to your teaching ability.
Oh, yeah. But I still couldn't figure out the backhand. I should just try this. She's like, it feels weird. This, I don't like it. I don't like this. It feels weird. All of a sudden, she tries it, and these perfect little chip shots that I'm like, I'm literally diving, ripping
or
my shoes.
Or sometimes I whip it.
Sometimes you, yeah, and then, but you're like merciless. You're not about the volley. I'm not into that. You're not about, like, the back and forth. You're all about merciless.
Yeah.
So.
I like it, though.
So, is that your hobby? Tennis is your hobby?
No, it's not my hobby.
Oh, that's not your hobby. Okay.
No, but I've been doing that.
Okay.
So, I don't... Everybody knows, again, the following. They know that to get me to read something, it needs to be something real special. Right?
Right.
Do you know this?
I know this. Yes, I know. Why are you yelling at me? I know this.
So, I don't just read. I don't like to read. But, to substitute the lack of reading, what I have discovered is watching TV.
That is not an original hobby. That is really upsetting.
No,
I didn't know. Like, I thought I knew you were where you were going with this, because I know you. But then when you said, I'm like,
no. But I don't like watching mindless TV. I have discovered that I really, really enjoy watching documentaries.
Again, this is not impressive.
What do you mean? What do you mean?
Okay, okay.
This is like reading, but with pictures. Moving pictures. Anyway. Why? What? What? What?
No. Keep going. I know there's more to the story.
No, I feel judged. I feel you're being judgy.
I'm not judgy.
Why is this funny to you?
Because I like watching TV. No. Not just mindless TV. I like watching documentaries. Like, it's newly discovered form of television. There's a whole section on Netflix that's just documentaries.
No, okay, but not just any documentary.
Okay.
I like what... Okay, everybody knows, again, fan base. Okay?
Right.
Y'all know that I like reading up on and getting information on the civil rights movement and history and the type of music that was played in certain decades. And I found this plethora of documentaries that speak on specific timelines in specifically American history. And I'm obsessed. I'm obsessed. I have friends in older age brackets, and I love just picking at their brain. Just like, where were you where Kennedy got shot? You know, what kind of music did you... I know someone, a friend of mine, he was at Woodstock, and I'm like just talking it. And now I'm like, I knew Led Zeppelin and all these, like, The Clash and all, but I couldn't, like, tolerate it. I'm like, this is just noise. But knowing the impact that these bands had on these specific eras and the things that they were saying and why they were saying it and the message they were trying to give, and it holds so much more weight. So now I've gained a greater appreciation for even just things in music or like quotes and where they came from and where it started from. Like there's so much that has happened in the world. You have no idea. Like, there's so much.
Or maybe everyone's like, you're just getting that now, Dajay.
Okay, yeah, okay, but this is like coming from someone that, you know, like, it's not...
No, again, I totally don't like to read,
and it's not... And some people tend to just read to kind of escape and stuff. Like, I read for fun, but I never thought of, you know, reading or looking into things that, you know, really happened. Like, again, I do the civil rights thing. I'm still reading Dr. Luther King's... Martin Luther King's documentary. No, not documentary. Autobiography. I'm almost done Malcolm X.
No, you finished that.
No, not the last chapter. They didn't kill him yet. I ended up skipping to the part where, remember, Alex Haley was interviewing him and he was kind of relaying. Yeah.
Okay.
So, I kind of, yeah. But anyway, yeah, like, I learned a lot about Janis Joplin. Okay, that was a Netflix documentary. That was on Netflix. I'm not gonna...
Yeah, but I find that you're very nostalgic with, like, the 60s, 70s era and all the civil rights movements and the,
And then, all of a sudden. Like, as much as it's hard to watch this movie, but, like, now, like, I like Forrest Gump even more. Because they name drop, and, like, when you hear it the first time, it's like, okay, they're just saying a name. But when you're familiar with history and who did what for what...
Era,
party, or movement, or whatnot. Like, all of a sudden, it kind of like, oh, they're paying an homage to this person. Mm. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I like that. I like kind of. I'm Googling stuff. I'm Googling bands. I'm looking into, you know, just I think I'm informing myself more on stuff, and I'm actually excited about it.
So. After you watch these docs, because I watched a couple of them with you, and you're staying up late in the night sometimes.
Oh my goodness, like, I cannot help it. Like, I'm like one eye open. Like, yeah. I'm so tired, because sometimes it's like a, what is it? When it's back to back to back to back.
Marathon.
Yeah, it's a marathon. So it's just like, you know, it'll be 2 a.m, and I'm just like, I can't stop
you
watching this. But I'm so tired. But I can't miss it. And I don't want to. Anyway, your question.
So... So, having seen these documentaries that you're finding...
Did you know that they call Yoko Ono the Dragon Lady?
I knew that... I didn't know it was the Dragon
Lady.
Okay,
everyone knew she was disliked, but they called her the Dragon Lady. I'm sorry, that's profound to me. Like, that's a big deal. But John Lennon, and they said this to her in front of John Lennon, and John Lennon's like he didn't get all upset and all, like, you know, hands in the air, but he's like, you know, people can say this about her, but they can also thank her for being the reason why, even though the Beatles are not together anymore, that they're still writing certain songs. You know what I mean? Like, he
tried to flip it.
Yeah. And then, like, everyone's, like, clapping, and then she's, like, nodding, and it's, like... But, yeah, and, like, nobody likes her.
No.
I knew this. I'm not that out of it. But I just didn't know that she had a name.
But also, having not lived through that era, realizing what an impact... you knew how popular and how important and pivotal the Beatles were to music... But then to see, like, when they had broken up, it was almost like a national tragedy. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, people were crying.
Like, some people saw it. It was like a
funeral.
It. Yeah.
It was like a funeral for music.
Yeah. And you knew it was a big deal, but it was like, wow, like, this, like, the world kind of stopped because this band broke up, and you didn't realize what it would have been like to be alive during that time to deal with the impact of something like that. It was really interesting to catch up on those. But back to my question is, having seen these documentaries and pop culture history and American history as far as the politics and the civil rights and even stuff in the 70s that you didn't know about, little, like, homegrown terrorist groups that were existing in the United States. Like,
I know what you're talking about when you say that. You see that?
You see, wow. Is there anything that you would be inclined to read about now that has piqued your interest? Like, I actually want to... This would make me want to read a book about this particular band, politician, athlete, this subject. Does it pique your interest to do that?
So, two things that come to mind. I've been reading a comic book.
Okay.
Called March.
Okay.
Right. And it's based on the civil rights movement. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. It comes in 3 books. I still haven't read the 3rd one because it has not been released yet. It actually comes out tomorrow.
August 3rd.
August 3rd.
You're dating the episode. You're not supposed to date the episode.
Too bad. I'm excited. It's based on one of the front people, not Dr. Martin Luther King, not...
Someone who is considered the Big Six.
Exactly.
Right.
His name is John Lewis. Mm. And now that I've watched these documentaries and have seen that he was an integral person to that movement, having read the comic book, I want to get an autobiography. His autobiography. I also want to read more about the Black Panther Party. I'm actually very intrigued by that.
Okay.
I think there's always been a negative connotation attached to the Black Panther Party. Mm-hmm. But again, having watched these episodes and docs and stuff, there's a lot.
What I appreciate about your sentiments is you want to have a very, like, you don't just want to read, like, I like this character, I like this part of it, and that you only want to be informed about that. You're trying to be well informed
on both sides,
on every aspect of people's stance and positions and what it was they were trying to accomplish and what brought them to that point. Like, I appreciate you want to read Malcolm and Martin, you want to read John Lewis and find out about the Black Panthers. Like, you want to get every piece of that era and put it together.
It's such a heartbreaking time, mm-hmm. and it's horrible how people were treated, but it was such an interesting time.
Yeah.
And yeah, I can't.
Inspirational, extremely inspirational.
It really is, and you know that kind of stuff. It still exists. It's not gone. It hasn't disappeared, and but the fact that it has surpassed, or the reason why conditions are at this point is because there was people that took a stand like that. You know, I was watching this commentary on the Freedom Riders, actual Freedom Riders. And there, it caused a lot of division in families where, you know, there was a lot of black families that would be like, listen, just stay out of it. Just don't make trouble with the white people. Just, this is how our life is, and this, just accept it. And there was those that they're like, no, this is not acceptable. This is not acceptable for us to be treated like we're animals. And so it caused a lot of division in families. And, you know, with this particular Freedom Rider, the mother had pleaded with her, she's like, don't go, don't do this. On the other hand, her own father said, you need to do this. And he's like, because if I had done it, you wouldn't have to. And that resonated with me, right? So I'm not about politics. I'm not about, like, you know, but it's interesting to me, all of that stuff.
So so basically studying, becoming a student of history and educating yourself on things that have happened in our modern era has become your kind of hobby.
Yeah, and like I said, a lot of the stuff that happened is very much associated with the type of music that I like or that we listen to. Like Nina Simone, she was an artist. She was a pianist. She was an orchestra person before she started like singing and stuff. And then, you know, she got affected by what was going on and was a part of the movement. And then her music turned into that.
I think she even supported the Black Panthers.
I believe so. I also saw her documentary. Yeah, it was everything.
Yeah, it's cool. Mm-hmm. I'm happy for you. There's a cool bookshop in the city that I want to take you to. It's called a different, oh, I can't remember now. A different reading list or a different bookshelf. I think that's what it's called. If I'm misquoting it, pardon me, but it's located at Bathurst and Bloor, right around the corner from Honest Ed's. And they've got a really cool bookshelf or a bookstore that deals with a lot of history and civil rights movements and even like history in regards to Native Americans. Like, it's a really educational, good bookstore filled with stuff right up your alley.
I would love that.
Yeah, I'd really like to take you there.
I would love that.
So, can we talk about important stuff now? Like, we let you talk and catch up with your people. Like, can we talk about the real things that matter?
Like what?
Okay, 2 weeks ago, San Diego Comic-Con happened. Okay, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. None of this civil rights and all, like, real things that happen in history. I want to get your opinion on some of the things that have happened in geek news. There's comic book movies coming out. Trailers are being shown. This is important stuff. This is what makes the world go round. Okay, these are the things that matter in life right now. They showed the Wonder Woman trailer.
They really did.
What were you're not a person, as time goes by, not older, that's the wrong word. The more the time goes by, you're becoming a person who's like, I don't want to read a review, and I don't want to see trailers to be spoiled by them. I want to go into the movie, and I want to have a clean palate and just take it for what it is without being influenced by something I've seen or an impression I'm supposed to be getting beforehand. But having seen the Wonder Woman trailer of what they showed, what are your thoughts on it?
It looks really cool.
And that's it. Thank you. Okay, thanks everybody for listening.
I gotta say, because of my reservations of the BVS and all that nightmare, I was hesitant about, like, oh no, where are they gonna take her now? What direction is she going to? And when I saw the trailer, and I only saw it the one time, I like it. I like it. It's, how do I say it? I'm optimistic.
Okay.
Feature film.
Yeah, I am too. At first, I was not sold. Everything about the DC Universe thus far, I am not pleased with. Like, I don't even like how Joker looks, Suicide Squad, not a fan. Mm-hmm. Not really a fan of how Suicide Squad's looking. I have to see the film in order to properly assess it. But BVS, I had high hopes for. I thought that was going to be, and some people feel this way, and if you do, hey, thumbs up. I thought it was going to be the movie event of the past two decades. And I was disappointed, as many people know. But the one thing going into that that I was most concerned about was I didn't know if they had picked the right Wonder Woman. I felt they picked the right Joker. Like, Jared Leto's a great actor. Ben Affleck's a great actor for Batman. He looks through. Like, all those things were like, okay, this could go on. But the Wonder Woman, she's so kind of slim and like, petite. And, like, I'm expecting...
Amazon.
Yeah. But she's the one thing now that I'm like, okay, at least they've got that right. She looks like this... This trailer... Her portrayal, even her accent, it doesn't, it sounds otherworldly. It sounds like English, but you can't peg, like, is it ancient Greece? Is it, you know, Middle Eastern? Like, it's such a unique sound to when she speaks, her voice, her accent, you can't peg it. And her look is exotic, and her, the way she carries herself, it just looks really well done. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping, based on the trailer, and I, a lot of people are saying, you know, this is the DC Captain America.
I think so.
Going back into the First World War.
It looks a little shield. Redundant. I think I've seen it, but...
But I like that that it's not her fighting Nazis. I like that she's in a time that... It's like a period piece of an era that we don't often see movies being told in. Like the early... 20th century with this world war, and how does it tie into Themyscira and all of the mythology, and what was she doing there, and how does it affect what's to come? Because that was a big Easter egg in the BVS, seeing that picture of her with Chris Pine as Steve Trevor. What do you think of that casting?
I like Chris Pine being the Steve Trevor. At first I'm like, oh, that's Captain Kirk. But he seems to be falling right into that role. And all I see, when I saw that trailer, I saw Steve Trevor.
Okay.
Yeah.
The action scenes look great. Like, her fighting scenes. I love how the lasso, in any of the scenes where she's fighting, it shines so bright. Like, it's not just it's not just a gold rope. It's constantly shining, this beacon of gold.
What I like and dislike are her boots.
So what do you like about it? Explain.
I like that they seem functional.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. They should be functional. She shouldn't be in heels.
But at the same time, I'm thinking, because it's almost like layered pieces of metal. That can't be comfortable.
Oh, okay.
And to do battle, and I'm not talking from a woman's perspective. Like, I'm just saying, like, it just doesn't seem... It looks like it's functional, but at the same time, how can you move in the thing? Because it's almost like as she moved, it also... Again, I only saw the trailer once, but it's almost like the boot itself would also kind of, like, I don't know how to describe it. This thing here. Like, it'd move. It would just move.
Yeah, it looks almost cumbersome. Like, all these moving parts to the shoe. It almost looks like
shingles.
Yeah.
Not connected.
Yeah.
So
like, armor on her boots.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you didn't like
that. It makes sense if she kicks someone in the face and knocked them out.
Yeah.
But I just don't... You know, for her to move as swiftly as she should. But then again, she could fly. I haven't seen her fly yet. Have we seen her fly? I haven't seen her fly.
I don't think I can.
Doesn't matter. No. Yeah. But she looks BA. I like her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Here's hoping that movie rocks.
We'll see.
The same time, again, talking about the DCU, they showed clips of the new Justice League. So it's obviously not finished, but what they have put together thus far, they put a little scene or a trailer, if you will, for Comic-Con fans. And we saw that one as well with Batman going around the world.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to remember.
And trying to form this Justice League, this group of people, this squad that he needs to fight this evil, this oncoming evil that's entering the world. What were your impressions of it?
Not impressed.
Okay. Any elaboration? What is it about it? Some people are really like, oh, it looks good so far. A lot of people are commenting like, hey,
I'm not exactly sure why he's looking for people out in the open as Bruce Wayne. That is a little puzzling to me.
Can I ask you a question? Not to interrupt you, but based on what you just said, is it wrong? Because I agree with you 100%, but is it wrong to feel like this is what the characters are known for? Here's how they've been consistently portrayed. There's a consistency to what Bruce Wayne does, right? Batman. Anytime he's been asked to join the Justice League, he's always been like, listen,
I'm a one-man show.
I got stuff going on in Gotham. When you really need me, if it's really about to hit the fan, give me a call and I'll help out. But he's never been the type to... He was never the one to go around saying, I need to form a Justice League. He's more like, I don't need people in my business. So is it wrong to be upset or frustrated when you see, like, a change happening like that? Or is it just, like, that fanboy, fangirl, like, oh, you're always going to find something to be upset with and you're a comic book nerd. Like, can't you just let it go and take it for what it is? Like, from what you just said, in regards, like, I don't understand why Bruce Wayne is going around in his, as Bruce Wayne, trying to form a Justice League. Like, it just doesn't seem consistent. So is it wrong to be, like, irritated with the story already?
No. No, I don't think so, no.
Okay. It's just that it's one of, like, you don't want to talk, you don't want to start criticizing something before there's a finished product. Or to be, like, already hate, oh, you just, you hate everything DC does now because you're a Marvel guy. And you're just nitpicky because it's not following the comic books or the animated versions. But I want to give your opinion because you're a person who's, as far as, like, your appreciation for Batman, because you've read that character more than any other character. When you see it being portrayed in a way that's not consistent, how do you, like, continue on? I just wanted to...
I just think it doesn't... It's not who the character is. I think it takes away from... Not just him, but from everybody. Like... These people are not out in the open because they don't want to be known. So secret identity is integral to a superhero.
Well, especially Batman.
That's what I...
No, but like... You're getting heated. No. It's like The Flash, everyone kind of knows The Flash is Barry Allen and Wally West. Like that... Victor Stone, there's no secret identity there with Cyborg, right? He is Cyborg now. That's all he is.
Well, he's all machine all the time. You can't exactly hide that.
Like, yeah. Arthur Curry being Aquaman, like he lives in Atlantis. Yeah, that's his kingdom. There's no secret identity there.
No, but he Batman, is somewhat of a myth. Nobody sees a man in the deep shadows of the sea on a daily basis. He doesn't want people to know about Atlantis. That's how he keeps it protected.
Yeah.
So, you know, having a secret, not a bad idea. And it seems like they're crapping on it when they just have him going around in his $1 million suit. I hear you can run fast. Like, what?
This is my favorite line.
And then he throws a batarang as Bruce Wayne to this guy who supposedly he's trying to figure out if he even wants to reveal who he really is. Like, you know what I mean? Like, what if one of these guys doesn't want to be on your squad? Like, how about we think this twice? Like, that is Bruce. That's Batman. He's detective, deduces, you know, problem solves. He obsesses before he actually makes a decisive decision. And he's kind of just...
Daff J.
Chances here and there. And I just don't think it's true to the character.
I was thinking the same thing. And this, for people listening, this isn't some sort of scripted, like, back and forth thing that we thought we would, like, do to be funny. I was thinking, if Barry Allen, when Bruce Wayne approaches him and says, yeah, you can run fast, and he throws the batarang at him the way Batman does, and you see Barry Allen do kind of like the whole, everything's in slow motion, sees it go by, catches it, brings it back to him. and doesn't want to join the team, right? Now he knows that Bruce Wayne is Batman.
That's what I just said.
But that's what I'm saying. But in this case, it's not a problem because this Batman has no problem killing people. So if Barry Allen doesn't want to join the Justice League, he's just going to knock him out. He's just going to find a way to kill him. That's the only thing I can, that would make sense to me. He goes to the best part is he goes to Arthur Curry and says, I hear you could talk to fish. Like, what the heck is that? Who's writing these words to come out of Batman's mouth?
Hey, I have a question.
I may have an answer.
Isn't the Green Lantern a part of the Justice League?
Supposed to be.
So why isn't he in this? Like, isn't he one of, like, the founders of, like, when we think Justice League, who are we talking about here? Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, the big three.
Yes.
And then?
Flash.
Uh-huh.
Green Lantern.
Uh-huh.
Aquaman.
My point exactly.
And I would say,
Is having a Green Lantern to Guardians of the Galaxy for them?
No,
like, it's just, too far-fetched?
They messed up that movie already, so they got to redo it, right? They got to redo it, so that's not in the universe yet. And Martian Manhunter, I would say, is an integral part of
it. I love him. He's my fave.
Yeah, so it's seven. To me, it's this big seven, those ones. But the other interesting part in this trailer that I saw, and we all know why, for those who have watched BVS, Superman isn't part of the Justice League yet, because he's dead.
Hmm.
He's usually a centerpiece.
He usually has something to do with the...
He's usually, like, when they take the picture, like, when you look at Justice League, like, animated series or, like, a comic book, like, they put him, like, in a lineup, and Superman's, like, in the middle. He's, like, we're the Justice... Like, that's how you know it's a Justice League, because Superman's there with Wonder Woman and Batman, but he's dead. So, apparently, in this universe, it makes complete sense that the guy who wants to be alone in his cave... with maybe his surrogate son, who he's training to be a vigilante, now is the one who wants to go in his civvies and travel all over the world and find the guy who could talk to fish and the kid who can run fast. And I don't know if you noticed, but Ezra Miller's Flash suit is kind of like Wonder Woman's boots. There's all these metal pieces, flaps on them.
I don't know if I like that.
I hate it.
Isn't that going to slow him down just a bit? Like, isn't there some physics or something behind that?
The physics to me that would make sense is take the guy who has physically been playing the Flash for the last two seasons that everybody loves and let him be Flash.
Really? You think that?
He's great. Grant Gustin. The show is good. He embodies Barry
Who's
Allen.
Who's Grant Gustin?
He's the guy who's Flash on television.
I'll just call him Barry because I don't know who Grant is. who's Grant? I'm like, how do we change subjects?
No, who's going to care about this Flash when everyone likes the television show? It doesn't make sense. You're making two of the same exact character compete with each other when for 2 to 3 seasons before the Justice League movie comes out, everyone's going to know and like this character already. But you're putting out another character to compete with something that people already love. Why would you do that?
Okay, this is going to sound really stupid. But why...
Unless they're making a multiverse. Go ahead.
Oh, that was going to be my question.
Okay.
Yeah. Never mind.
That could be their trump card. To be like, well, you guys think that this is it, but our television universe and movie universe are going to collide. Because now there's a Superman as well. What do you think of this guy playing Superman on the Supergirl? Like, the way he looks?
Nope.
Not a fan?
Nothing.
He missed leg day, arm day,
yeah.
No muscles.
Nothing. There's nothing there.
They are taking a lot of pictures of him in without the cape, showing his booty. I'm not sure why they're going to those lengths, but they're calling him Mr. Super Booty.
No way!
Yeah.
Yeah, the physicality of the TV Superman that's going to happen, not feeling it so much.
Not so much.
No. I mean, if they can give Supergirl built-in foam muscle... Why wouldn't they do it for the Man of Steel?
You know what's funny is that when you brought up his physicality, they took a picture of Clark Kent and Jimmy Olsen in the CW, like the Supergirl show.
The body switch?
No, but Jimmy Olsen is 6'4", 6'5", and it looks like Superman is 5 foot nothing beside him. It's like, yeah, complete body switch.
I think DC's missing the mark on in the, like, the big screen and the small screen.
I think they got it.
They're better not on paying small attention screen. To those details that are everything. I don't know. We'll see. We'll have to see. Maybe Batman has been scoping everybody out for months and months and months, and then they're only showing us when he's finally trying to recruit everyone. We don't know. We haven't seen it. So this is me trying to be optimistic.
Okay.
But Wonder Woman looks cool.
Wonder Woman looks cool.
Yeah.
Are you optimistic for Suicide Squad?
I'm going in there with no expectation.
All right. Yeah. Cool. That's the best way, I think, to do it. No expectations.
Just out watch of it all fresh. Of the characters, I have to say, the only one I feel is on point is Harley Quinn.
Okay.
Yeah, all the other ones, I'm not quite sure.
Okay, I feel from what I've seen so far, the one character in Suicide Squad that I'm most confident in the portrayal is Viola Davis as Amanda Waller.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
I feel like she's probably going to be the one that's on point. I don't know how I feel about this version of Harley Quinn.
Really?
I'm not saying that she's not a good actress. I'm not saying she doesn't have the chops. I just don't like that particular look that they're going with, like a skater.
Well, I think they're trying to mimic or mirror a Joker as the female Joker. They're trying to mirror off of each other.
Yeah.
But I'm talking personality.
Yeah.
The quirkiness, the borderline psycho. Yeah, from what I've seen, I like that of her.
Okay. Here's hoping. Fingers crossed.
We'll see.
So before we continue on, one more DC topic. This is going to be like the DC movie first front hour of our episode. At the San Diego Comic-Con, they did a pre-screening or a... Not a pre-screening, but a world premiere, if you will, of Batman the Killing Joke, DC animated movie. The latest feature film from the animated DC universe. Now, the Killing Joke, as you know, and many people know listening to the show, is one of the quintessential Batman stories written by Alan Moore and Dave Gibbons. Do you know the creative team, what it is that they're famous for?
The Watchmen.
There you go. Well done. As well as V for Vendetta.
I don't like that one.
You don't like the movie?
I don't like the masks.
Okay.
It's scary. It reminds me of a clown. And a mime at the same time. Clown and mime in one.
I get you.
That makes sense. It freaks me out.
I get you.
Mm-hmm.
So Alan Moore is often considered the greatest comic book scribe of all time. Just for the depth and the richness of his stories. It's almost like they're novels. They're not just comic book scripts. Not just there's a lot of... a book like The Watchmen is often considered one of the greatest novels of all time, not just a graphic novel. So anyways, Alan Moore, his famous Batman story is The Killing Joke, where Barbara Gordon
gets crippled
by the Joker, and they later spin that character off into the Oracle, who becomes a great essential part of the DC universe.
She's great.
But it's a great story for anyone who... We did an episode on it. It was a fun episode because the lights actually went out while we were talking.
Yeah,
we were pitch black. Just the computer power battery was all that we had. But if you want to hear how much of a impactful story it is, you can listen to that episode.
Or read it. It's definitely a pickup.
It's a pickup. It's a must-own classic Batman story. And it ends with... open ending left up to the reader whether or not Batman actually kills Joker or if he lives on. It became part of continuity because they continued having Barbara Gordon to be in a wheelchair. Now, Alan Moore has recently said that he's separated himself from the story. He doesn't want to be associated with it anymore, because if he could do it, he would not have written it. Because he doesn't like the way he used the female character as just a muse of someone to be shot and abused in order to tell this story. He doesn't like that he had to put a woman through that, a character, a strong character through that, in order for the story to be told. He doesn't feel comfortable with it anymore. Now, it isn't your typical Batman story that you might give to a young kid to read. You might give it to a 13, teenager age, I would say. But this movie, now that they've adapted into it, they've made it rated R.
What?
Yeah. It's a rated R feature.
What? What? Why? What?
Just because they felt that in order
for... What? Okay, because it's already a heavy content.
That's why. Because it's a heavy content, right? And in order for you to really...
Okay, with what's already there.
What's already there. So in order to not water it down, like, with what we got, let's not hold anything back. Let's make this movie the way it should be made.
Okay.
And let's take it to the next level, even, because...
What next level?
So the violence can be... Heavy, heavy on the violence, heavy on the blood. But there's also, it's not a big enough book.
When you say butt, you get a bubble in your cheek. Is that on purpose?
I'm not sure, but now everybody's going to watch me speak and say butt. It's completely taken away
from you do this thing. Butt.
I don't even know what to say right now. I want to edit that out, but it's hilarious. I'm going to keep it in. Okay, but I'm going to be conscious of it now. The book doesn't have... It's only a 48-page graphic novel. It's not like 6 issues.
It's short.
It's short.
Yeah, it's a train ride.
Perfect. Even less if you read normal. But they felt like, okay, we want to adapt this. It's got Mark Hamill as the Joker. Perfect. It's got Kevin Conroy as Batman. Perfect.
Okay, sounds good. Pretty good so far.
So they said, okay, we gotta add a little bit more in the front end of this story to make it an hour and 20 minutes, right? So the first half hour is not from the book. It's new material.
Are you spoiling it?
Spoilers. Good call. I haven't seen it yet. I've heard about it. I've read about it. And at San Diego Comic-Con, it had a mixed reaction. Some people were like up in arms about what they added to it. So in the first half hour is a lot of Barbara Gordon as Batgirl and her relationship with Batman. And it...
Yeah, the mentor, of course.
Mentor, you know, they're supposed to be... He's like a patriarch, like a father figure. But anyways, they get into this argument, this spat, where she starts yelling at him, hitting him. And what culminates is that they have sex.
What?
Batman and Batgirl have sex. In this movie.
Together?
Yeah, together, with one another. Yes, the Batman and the Batgirl.
What?
Yeah. Now...
No, but you're just telling this story like it's not a shock.
It is a shock. It is a shock. And again, here's where I'm going to go back to, is it a matter of being a fanboy and, oh, you just... All you want is it to be... Like the comic book, not everything. Everything's got to be adapted, and you got to. It's not that. It's
listen. I'm all for change.
Me too.
It makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where is the build up? Is there? Do they allude that there was something there? Like, I'm not trying to give them reason to have taken it to this direction, but like what? They were just fighting, and they just had a moment of
heat. Like, they just got into heat or something.
That's stupid.
And I don't know if it's to add weight to what happens to Barbara and why Batman would suddenly want to act...
Let me tell you something. Batman will probably dare cross that line if something ever happened to Alfred. And I don't see anyone getting them into bed together. So I don't think that was a necessary... thing that had to happen for Batman to react and be like, you hurt one of my own, like, not.
And from what I've heard it's not even insinuated. It's not like you see them kiss and then, you know, like the next day they wake up and she's in his bed and, you know, like, oh my goodness, that just happened. Apparently it's graphic.
Shut your face. They show them doing stuff.
I don't think it's like porn level, but like it's
Don't say porn. I don't like that word porn. You can say pornography.
Okay. Fine. It's not at that level.
It sounds dirty. Oh. Okay. Pornography, I mean, it also is dirty, but it's like at least like anatomical. Like, okay, it's okay. Like, you know, medical maybe.
No. Okay, sure.
It's a family show is what I'm saying.
True, true. So it's not at that level. But it's enough where it's in a rated R movie.
I don't know. Yeah.
And it just seems absolutely, for me, haven't watched it. I don't have a proper, like, I haven't seen it to have a fair opinion, but it sounds ridiculous. It sounds absolutely ridiculous and unnecessary. Because to me, what I feel when you're adapting a Batman story, you can still get the weight. You can still get the point of, because the point of that story isn't necessarily about Batgirl. And that's the problem with it from Alan Moore's perspective. The point of that whole story was to torture Commissioner Gordon, for the Joker to torture Commissioner Gordon.
And get him to that brink.
To break him.
To break him.
To show him, like, we're all crazy. To make him
like the Joker.
Right.
Yeah.
We're all one bad day away from becoming me. That's what he says in the book. All it takes is a bad day to turn into me. That's the point of the story. Not whether or not Batman and Barbara, or Bruce and Barbara, were romantically linked, if there's some sort of sexual tension, none of that. So to add that to the story, especially when it was always more interesting when Dick Grayson and Barbara Gordon had seeds of romance and the possibility of romance, that tension between them being not mentors, they were proteges of Bruce, both of them, growing up together, and here's their father figure, and they're both
kind of his protégés. Well, and I can't even, and maybe I'm taking it way too, you know, whatever, but I can't imagine Batman doing that to Commissioner Gordon.
I don't know.
Do you understand what I mean? Like, I think there's a honor. Loyalty there. There is a respect there that Batman wouldn't cross lightly like that. Especially as you said before, like, he's like the father figure. He's the mentor. He's the teacher. Like, you don't, this isn't, to be honest, this right here is discouraging me from watching this movie. It's actually kind of turning my stomach a little bit.
Yeah, it is disturbing.
The direction that they took this.
And it's like,
not cool.
For me, the DC Animated Universe was like my last bastion of great DC movies. Okay, so far the cinematic universe is not hitting the bullseye, but the animated stuff was always pretty consistent and none of it was exactly like the comic books they were based on, except for The Dark Knight Returns. But the other stuff they adapted, none of it was exactly the same, which was good. Because I even felt like Under the Red Hood, it was different from the book. But how they changed it, I felt, was right for the story.
I want to watch that now.
But to do this to Barbara, I just feel like it cheapens her even more. And it's like taking it there for the sake of taking it there, where it has nothing to do with why the impact the story was supposed to have. So I was really excited for the fact that Mark Hamill would be back, Kevin Conroy is back. Like, it almost sounded like the perfect movie, and then I feel like they do something that has that never had any premise or like never existed. It never existed. DC
is trying to go for like this shock factor. Like, they have nothing up their sleeve, and so they're just grasping for straws and trying to get that, you know, reaction.
And it's not being well received.
Good, because it sounds like a disaster, and it's not going to be received by me either. Thumbs down. I don't like it. Nothing about it. Mm-mm.
Okay.
No, I'll just read the graphic novel if I want a good story
being told. So. And I know you're biased because you're my wife and everything, but you don't think it's like overly nitpicky or fanboyish to be like, can't you just for to be bothered by extreme change. I don't mind change. I don't mind adaptation.
But if it ain't broke, don't fix. I've said it before, I say it again.
Yeah, I just...
They didn't have to do that.
I really hope they don't add that little nugget of history into the comic book thing. Because they can do that sometimes, where they kind of do a timeline shift and like, oh, this happened. You remember this happened? Like, I don't hope that that doesn't exist.
That's ridiculous. I'm actually kind of disappointed. You said there was mixed reviews?
Yeah.
I would have been the people booing. I would have booed. I would have stood up on my chair and thrown a pen at someone.
A pen?
Yeah.
You're dangerous.
Throw
a chair!
No, you throw a chair and you just stand on it. It would be a pen. Anything that, like, you know, I would, like, I'd have a pen because I like...
To write.
Right, or, like, you know, when you ask people for autographs, you got to be ready, right? Because they'll be like, well, I don't have anything. Like, here's one for you. You know, you got to be ready. So I'm just thinking. This,
at Comic-Con, where there's artists everywhere drawing pictures, you've got to have the supplies.
Yeah, I would have thrown something. That's my point.
Okay. So me and you are on the same page so far on almost everything. Let's move beyond comic books now.
Where are we going now?
Let's go to a place where no man has gone before.
Not Star Wars. Star Trek!
There you go. Star Trek Beyond, the third film in this new Star Trek universe. I gotta make sure I don't say Star Wars, because that's always like the slip of the tongue. I'm always ready to say Star Wars. So Star Trek Beyond, directed by Justin Lin, who was the director of the Fast and the Furious movies. The initial reception to the trailer for this movie was a big thumbs down, because people were like, oh no, the guy from Fast and the Furious is doing a Star Wars movie, or Star Trek movie is going to be a disaster. Simon Pegg, who's played Scotty in the movie, was a screenwriter for the movie.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. He wrote the story.
He wrote the story?
He did. Yeah. And he's a big Star Trek fan, and so is Justin Lin, apparently. They're both...
Who's
big,
Justin Lin?
The director. I just... Oh. The director of the movie. So all the cast is back. Chris Pine, Zachary Quinto, Carl Urban, Simon Pegg. The whole cast is there from
Who
last
Who are all
year.
These people?
That's Chris Pine is Captain Kirk.
Yes.
Zachary Quinto is Spock.
Yes.
Carl Urban is Bones.
Okay.
You
gotta use your fictional names, because I don't know who you're talking
about. That's how you know
about.
The world, by fictional names.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So they're all there. And then this one, the villain is going to be Idris Elba.
I like him.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I think he should be James Bond.
I think so, too.
Yeah.
I think we had this conversation
we
before.
We have. We did have the conversation.
Did we concur?
Hey, when you're almost 15 episodes in, you start to forget some of the stuff you talked about, right? So Idris Elba, he's the villain. Star Trek Beyond. Daph J, do you want to read the brief synopsis of the movie for the people?
It says, the USS Enterprise crew explores the furthest reaches of uncharted space, while they encounter a new ruthless enemy who puts them and everything the Federation stands for to the test.
Okay, so spoilers ahead of time, if you haven't seen the film, we're going to probably say a couple things that ruin parts of the movie for you. But Daph J, what were your expectations going into this? Do you consider yourself a Star Trek fan?
No. I don't. Okay, sorry. I consider myself a Star Trek fan of this generation. So like, of the movie franchise. The television show and all the other, like, Beyond and Express and Stargate, whatever.
Express, Stargate, none of those are show titles.
No, there is. There's
Next Generation and Voyager and Deep Space Nine and Enterprise. Oh, that's what they're called. Express.
So, well, at least you know I'm not making it up. I'm not a fan.
No.
To be honest, and I'm sorry, Star Trek fans, I remember my mother watching it sometimes. I think she liked Professor X. I think she liked him as an actor.
Oh, okay. Patrick Stewart in The Next Generation. Okay.
Right? I remember
John Luke.
Seeing Star... Okay, let me take that back. I don't know if my mother even knew what was going on. But I remember walking into my living room and seeing these people on my television screen.
Okay.
And all I remember is just... very quiet dialogue. between one person and the other person, and then stars, and then chairs, and then more dialogue, and then pointy ears, and then more dialogue. Like, it was just, it seemed very boring to me. Okay. It wasn't intriguing.
Right.
I didn't know what was going on. I didn't, it didn't spike up any interest in me. So for me, a Star Trek was always boring.
Okay.
I didn't see any action. And it didn't seem funny. Maybe I was too young to understand what was happening.
But
Star Wars was like, pew, 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 and like, you know, walking robots and like big, you know, distorted aliens speaking in different languages, but you knew what they were saying. Mm. So it was, that was fun.
Right. There was a fantasy element of Star Wars that is high adventure and swashbuckling
type of thing. And so this Star Trek, the theatrical,
the J.J. Abrams.
Right. That was
more, you know, up the alley.
All of a sudden, I knew there was a problem. There was something to be done. It wasn't just talking and problem solving. Action. It's like, no, we gotta do something about this before we die. Like, and there was comedy. It was very crass, sarcastic dialogue, and that's what I like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Disclaimer: I myself, I'm not at all an authority on anything Star Trek. I'm not gonna pretend to be. I know the names of the shows, I know some of the names of the characters, but I've never extensively searched into any of those series to be able to have an informed opinion. Like Daf J, I am a Star Wars fan at the end of the day. That's much, much rather watch that anytime. But the Star Trek movies, J.J. Abrams stuff, and it could be because he really wanted to make Star Wars. And so those Star Trek movies that he made, I thought they were excellent. I'm like, if this is what the other Star Trek stuff is like, I'm going to love this. But apparently, from talking to people who are real Trekkies, like old school, extended watching Trekkies, this new Star Trek franchise is not for them. They're like, that's not what Star... Some of them say fairly, like, it's good. It's good entertainment. But it's not true to Star Trek of what it was intended to be. It was intended to be a diplomatic mission of people exploring space.
So they're like us with the extreme change.
Right, right, right.
You're like, stop it.
You're messing with the character. Okay. Like, you're not staying true to what the whole point of Gene Roddenberry's universe was supposed to be, which was exploration and discovery and diplomatic, you know, solving of problems. And it was also, from what I do know in hearing people talk about the impact of the series had, it was the show that broke all barriers as far as race was concerned for when it came out, right? It had a black woman on the television screen at a time where that didn't happen often. It had a Asian man as a main character. It had, you know, Scottish and people of, and aliens and green people. Like, it was really, it was saying something more for that time of being tolerant of people from different backgrounds and learning to cooperate and work with people with the sci-fi and the space and all of those type of things. That, so that was what the intention of Gene Roddenberry, from what I've been told and heard, it was groundbreaking in that way. So for people now to see that change of pace, the high frenetic action and destruction and the almost like almost Star Wars-esque version of Star Trek, for a lot of people, it's not their cup of tea who are old school Trekkies.
But okay, for those people then, and I say this ignorantly because I'm not a Star Trek fan, but for those people, it's not like they don't allude to the fact that that's what they're doing, that they're exploring. I mean, in the second Star Trek, didn't they find them on some kind of planet where they were trying to help the volcano from exploding? But they didn't want to be seen, and then they had to take off and run into.
Yeah.
There's no commentary on what they're doing. And in this movie,
they allude to it.
Exactly. Yeah. What do you expect will happen, though, when you go into uncharted territory that you're not exactly invited to? I mean, combat and disagreement naturally will occur. Right. So, and I think too, back then, you know, the crazy, you know, lights and super action wasn't exactly the thing back then. Now, people's attention span, I mean, you can't just sit there and listen to dialogue. We can't handle it anymore. Unless you're someone like me and, you know, you want to take a taste of history once in a while. But most of the time, we want lights and we want action. We want explosions. We want stuff to amaze us. And in this generation, I don't think the way Star Trek was portrayed back then would be tolerable now. I don't think people have the patience for that intelligent dialogue. They just want, they want action.
Yeah, I can't say because I wasn't.
Does that make sense?
It makes sense. It does make sense, but I still think it should. I still think it should be true to.
Absolutely. I'm just being the devil's advocate here.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I agree. I think you're making something for a new generation. My argument is this: if you are a fan of the original Star Trek stuff from the 60s and the old movie franchise from the 80s and the Next Generation and all those other television shows and feature films, the good thing about this movie that I kind of respect, ignorantly as you said, is that they don't make it seem like that didn't happen.
Yes.
They say this did happen. If this is what you like,
this movie.
Yeah, so spoilers. There's a portion in this movie where Spock has a crisis of conscience of where he should proceed with his life, what he should do with his heritage of being Vulcan, because he's, you know, the last of a dying breed. His planet is gone, as we saw in the first film. So in this one, he learns that his alternate version of himself that helped him get through situations in the last two movies, which I thought was cool, when Leonard Nimoy, the original Spock, talks to himself as a younger man and informs him, here's my interaction with these situations. Here's what you have to prepare for. These are the ramifications. That's the Spock that everybody knows. That's the Spock that everybody remembers and has lived with and went through those experiences with. He's still there.
Mm-hmm.
And
they still pay homage.
Yeah, perfect. They pay homage. It's the perfect way to put it. And in this one, Spock, he has like a, it's almost like a safety deposit box at the end of the movie that he looks through and sees the life that another version of him lived.
Mm-hmm.
And it shows pictures from
the original old cast.
Yeah, the movie, the original movie from the 80s.
Oh, movie.
That okay. Was, yeah. So it's not to say like, hey, if you love that and that's your Star Wars, that still Star exists. Trek. Star Trek. Sorry, I'm so sorry. I'm not trying to be...
You did say this might happen.
Yeah, I'm not okay. Trying to be disrespectful. It did exist, and it still matters. Just with this new version, for people like myself who were never into it, because I just felt like it was too dense. Like, it was just too much to catch up on.
Or dull.
I didn't say that.
No, but, like, I'm just saying it was tiring. I was tired. I was so tired of the talking.
It's a whole universe into itself. So for me, I'm like, I don't know where to start. Like, if I want to watch those movies.
Also, that's the other thing. Like, right. Even if you wanted to give it a chance, it's like there's Generation, there's Genesis, Voyager. There's all this other. Like, you didn't know where to go. And then who's who? Like, yeah. I only knew that there was a plethora of Star Trek universe. I didn't know which one mattered, which one was good, which one.
What order does it go in?
Yeah. It was a smorgasbord of just Trek, and it kind of discouraged me from wanting to get into it. This, on the other hand, again, it was like a fresh. This is the guy that's gonna be Captain Kirk. This is the guy with the bowl haircut. This is the, you know what I mean, like, and they were main characters that you were able to kind of distinguish, and be like, okay. This is a new beginning. I'm sorry for those that didn't like it because, again, it's not your Star Trek. And I totally get it. I totally get it. Being the one to read a comic book and when they make it into a movie or an animated series, it when it doesn't follow the the source material. Exactly. It's a heartbreak. Yeah. It is. I totally get it. In this case, though, I thought it was fun. However, overall, I think making a third movie of this whole thing, I think it was a bit of a unnecessary. I think it was unnecessary.
So, did you like it? How did you feel about it? Because myself, going into it, I was like, I heard this. I have a feeling, a suspicion that this one is going to bomb. But it was actually much better than my expectations and even the critics. Like, from what I've read about it, it's well received. Did you enjoy it?
I enjoyed it for entertainment value. It was fun. It was something to watch. But I kind of think they just made a story out of something just to talk about.
That's what every movie does, though.
No. I mean, okay, because it was kind of going back to the beginning of what we were talking about in regards to the purpose of the Federation and what they do is to go explore and all this business. It kind of comments, though, that they've been in space for I don't know how many years.
They're on their third year out of five when I think this movie's
so taking place. So, like, you know, Spock, like you said, has this, like, what do I do now? Kirk is like, this is not what I thought it was going to be. There's no one in my life. I haven't done anything for myself. I'm kind of just in this loop of nothing. And I think I'm done with this. Like, what's the word I'm looking for? It's almost like the novelty wore off.
Okay.
Of this space exploring.
Yeah.
So he's kind of like, I'm done with this.
Okay.
So if he's done with it and Spock doesn't know what he wants to do with himself, like, why are you making a movie out of it? You should have just left it. Wrath of Khan was what? But what? Why are you laughing? Did I say something wrong now?
Wrath of Khan was the other Star Trek universe. The last one was in.
That's what I'm saying. Okay. So the last one was really good, and everyone was a team, and everyone decided that they were gonna stick this out for years to come, and they were gonna do their Star Trek exploring thing.
And you think that's it? Stop.
Yeah, I think this one was
a franchise, right? They got to keep going, like, to make money. The studio is going to continue to make more.
I don't
more.
Think they had to. I'm just, if they wanted to make a movie out of it, fine. I understand the money making. I just think the storyline was weak.
Just didn't expand it enough to keep.
The storyline was weak. Okay, it was just, they were bored, and then they just so happened to fall into this thing where they have a disgruntled, back in the day, Star Trekker.
An old Trekker.
Yeah, like, and then, you know, they get rid of him. Yay.
I found, like, really enthralled with the action that was, like, whoa, it's just nonstop. Very, like, frenetic energy of a movie. Like, the ship completely. Like, I thought those parts of it were things I had never seen happen. Where they kind of tore the ship apart piece by piece and it just became, like, this saucer. And they didn't, like, how do they get out of this? It was a lot of those, like, how are they going to get out of this? But there was a part of me was like, what's happening now? Why are they here?
Yeah, I couldn't follow the story.
That part of it was kind of like, so wherever it was that they were going to explore, that's not really who they're going to deal with. They're not going to communicate and deal with their exploration. It's that they were off course. And here is this horrible.
No, I think it was a rescue mission that they were sent on, right? And then they were kind of tricked into.
Yeah. Someone tricked them to go on a rescue mission in order to for that ship to be sabotaged. They were trying to help somebody else. Right.
But then it turned into an actual rescue mission where he had to save his crew. I mean, we're spoiling this left, right, and center. If you haven't seen it, But like I said, it was almost like. It's almost like they were writing the story as they went along, and they're like, oh, this isn't this is kind of boring, so let's make this happen, and let's put these people here, and let's involve this person. Oh, let's throw this chick with these crazy tattoos that's so BA and make her an ally. Like, it was kind of like they were just kind of going, the story seemed kind of like off the cuff. Things were just happening until it just happened, and then we were done.
Okay, so it was just all reactionary.
Like, something happened, like, all these things happened from nothing. Kirk. He didn't want to do nothing. Spock was kind of, I don't know, thing and thing broke up. Like, it was just like, and everything's kind of falling apart. Like, we were on a high note. Why are we...
But I think that's what it was, is that here are people at their crossroads, and it was this situation that brought everybody focused and back together. Like, because they were on this, like, they're just going to go 5 years on this mission.
Yeah.
There's got to be some sort of tension or some sort of a... difficulty that they're going
to
be facing.
There has to be drama.
There's got to be some sort of drama. Yeah, yeah. There's got to be something that they face together that brings them back together. And I, at the end of it all, the culmination of things, it was a really fun ride. I felt like I had a lot of fun watching this movie.
It was very entertaining.
Very entertaining. Like, I felt like my money was well spent. I didn't leave the theater being like, oh my goodness, that was the horrible. And I liked the little pieces of history that they add to the movie, to the throwback things, to say, you know what, we don't forget.
You know
this
what
happened.
And not having, again, not having been a Star Trek, anything that was in there, I'm like, I wonder if that's like a what's the word,
reference,
no, something else,
throwback, callback, Easter
no
egg?
No, but anyway, I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if that's like a thing for the fans. Like,
okay.
You know what? This probably wasn't your idea of what Star Trek was supposed to be. Oh, it's so violent. And oh, it's not about this. It's actually about exploring.
It's for people with ADD.
Like, people. Take it easy with those comments there. I just felt like, you know what? It may not have been what you expected, but just to say thank you for watching loyally for all these years, this is our gift to you.
Mm.
So they had the little... that they had the little picture and then the thing and then the chairs when they were in that old ship, like the old setup. I'm like, I wonder if that's a ship that people grew up watching and doing stuff in there. You know
what
I mean? I think
that ship may be, I looked it up, that ship may be alluding to the one that they discover on that planet that they're stuck on. Is it's almost in the timeline of just before Star Trek Enterprise, which was like the prequel show, which was like the first mission that of like the first show of like, here's one of the first crews that have gone out there. That was what Enterprise was. So this ship, the USS Frederick, I think it was called, if I'm not mistaken, was like a ship that was built just before that show. So it was like a real throwback, and it could possibly allude to like another Star Trek show that they may make. So it is, like you said, that fan service.
And I found there was a lot of it in there, though.
Yeah,
even
the reference to, like, Kirk with the chair. At that point, like, he likes that chair. I think that was an actual thing.
Like, even the way the seatbelts were in the older, in the older ship. Or just, like, the setup of, like, a long, round couch. Like, I don't know. But I'm just thinking, like, I wonder if that has to do with... Or even, did you ever find out if that song that they played to throw off the bees?
Yes. So the enemy ships, they've got like this systematic way of attacking and breaking down.
They communicate with each other.
Yeah, like a swarm of bees. And it's some sort of radio frequency where they communicate in order to follow a pattern of flight. So they discover that in order to throw them off, they have to do another radio frequency to disrupt them. And because they have this old ship from almost our era, roughly around our generation, maybe just in the future, on that ship there's a radio or a stereo system that has an old school list of music, stuff that we know, that we would listen to. So they discover this stereo system, like, if we play this noise, play this classical music, It will be enough to disrupt that radio frequency. We just need to have our own. So that's what they use. And they find a song, they select it, and it's the Beastie Boys song, that young Kirk plays in the first Star Trek movie where he's driving his stepfather's car and he almost flies off a cliff. And he has, like, this moment of, like, that's a wonderful choice. And that's the song that they used to disrupt the enemy ships, which was kind of cool, I thought. Like, I like that connectivity.
You know what was kind of cool?
Mm-hmm.
That I actually
yeah.
picked up on that in the middle of the movie. And I said, huh, I wonder if this is a play on words on a couple of years back when he took the car and did this thing. And you're like, yeah, maybe. And I'm like there was a lot of recalling
yes.
on the yeah. stuff that yeah. they did, whether it was a long, long, long time ago yeah. or the beginning of this franchise.
Yeah, and I was just thinking to myself, like, us being new generation or next generation Star Trek fans of this new movie franchise, I have to say you're pretty well versed in these new movies, like picking up on characters and subplots and understanding what the heck is going on, because you watched them a couple times. It's not just like a one time run through. Like, you've actually enjoyed these movies where you've had the craving to watch them or watch them back to back. Like, you like them. And so it's a testament to the fact that, you know what, they're attracting a new era of fan that understands what these ships are, who these characters are. And a lot of ways, I feel like they're all kind of doing, like, Dr. McCoy very much plays up the way Dr. McCoy did in the original series. And sometimes I see Chris Pine channeling some William Shatner-isms, the original Captain Kirk, right? I find him doing little things that, even Spock, like, he plays a good Spock that you recognize, even though it's a new actor doing it. I find that he embodies those characters well. So all in all, I feel like it's successful in what they're trying to do. It's pulling in a new fan base, mm-hmm. if you will.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I didn't like when I watched the trailer, that I was kind of like, what the heck are they doing, was putting Idris Elba in all this white makeup. Here's a star, you know, a recognizable, attractive black man in our modern day cinema universe. Why are we covering him up in makeup where you can't even recognize him anymore? It just felt like a waste of using him in this movie, because he's not going to continue on playing this character.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, why would they do that? That's so dumb. They could have taken anybody to do that.
I don't remember the trailer, but that whole being covered in white thing, I think that kind of jogs my memory a little bit.
And you see, and I'm happy, and you kind of realize what they're doing, but as time goes on throughout the movie, he's got this power from the place where he's been trapped, where he takes the life energy out of people and slowly reforms his body. So you do eventually see a version, not exact, but you do see Idris Elba in this movie, which I was happy about, because I felt like it would have been a waste if they just had him covered the whole time in this white makeup and not even really sounding, you know, like himself.
Initially, I was happy to have quote-unquote seen him, but you don't actually see him.
No, and that's the thing.
And now that kind of bugs me a little bit, because you see him in, again, spoilers, in footage of who this trekker was in the past. And then, but when you're actually dealing with him in person, he's still distorted. It still doesn't look like him. It sounds right. like him, but it doesn't look like him. And I thought that was kind of like, I didn't like that they did that. I would have liked to have seen the actual
him,
in full form. Like, face your enemy. Face the actual enemy. And I feel like we didn't really get to do that. They pieced together who he was, again, based on previous, you know, video surveillance and whatnot. But the actual guy wasn't exactly... I can't say he was actually in the movie.
Hmm. Yeah. I mean, my only thing was is that...
And I was most excited to see him.
Yeah.
I like Idris Elba. I like him in everything.
Yeah.
I like the way he talks. I like the way he looks. There's something about his stature and demeanor and his presence. It's very demanding. And I don't think a whole lot of makeup...
Yeah,
I think that, like, took away from what he could have brought on screen.
Yeah, I agree. I felt that for me was a little bit of a disappointment. I'm happy, though, eventually that the makeup and the look of that character...
toned down a little?
Gets toned down and it's more back to human looking, where you kind of understand what it is that's happened based on where you see him originally as this, like, what kind of alien race is this? You can't even understand what he's saying, to who Kirk finally confronts. You can't, you get it. And that was not refreshing, but it was like, okay, I can handle that. I'll accept that. So in that way, I'm like, okay, at least I can feel Idris Elba.
It was a
riskier.
Happy medium?
It was a happy medium. But overall, like, the movie was fun. It was my least favorite of the three, but I did not dislike it by any means. Like, to say, don't watch this or it's not worth it. I'd buy it when the movie does come out to have a complete collection of these three. Because I feel like it tells a nice little arc. And all the characters are still there. You had said something to me when we left the theater, and I'm gonna steal it from you, but how they had all these characters paired up on these little mini adventures with each other, where you haven't seen them yet interact with, like, you see Sulu and Uhura, you see Kirk and Chekhov together, and you got McCoy and Spock paired up, and I know that's happened.
They had their own special screen time together.
Yeah,
although they're all main characters, it was just unusual to see them paired off with who they were paired up. Because typically, again, not a Star Trek fan, but I assume Kirk and Spock go together. But that's a match. You know what I mean? And, like,
go together how, Dav J? Because I thought Kirk,
they're like a set. You know what I mean? Like, if you're going to Toys R Us and you get, you know, Kirk. Like, if you go to Toys R Us, you get Superman, you get Batman also.
Okay.
You know what
they're
I'm
like
saying?
Like partners.
That's what I'm saying. And that's
teammates.
They kind of, like, mixed it up a little bit.
Right.
They put different people with each other.
Yeah.
And that made for...
That dynamic was cool
to
see.
That was
very
cool,
that
was one of the points
we talked
about in life.
Yeah, I did like that part. That made... When I didn't know what the heck was going on or what the point of it all was, because I felt like that at certain points, at least...
Even Scotty wasn't with his little green guy.
Yeah.
He was just on his own with some other... He made a new best friend.
Yeah, it's true. So, like, seeing them interact that way was fun. That kept me entertained.
Yeah.
That kept me engaged.
Yeah.
To see how they were all problem solving and working together. So, all in all, what would you rate the film for yourself? What would you score it out of 10?
I'm going to give it a 7.
Yeah, I'd give it a 7.
You would?
Yeah.
I think this is the first time where we've graded it the same.
Yeah, I'd give it a 7, 7.5.
Okay, now you're changing it.
No, in that range. I wouldn't go above that, but I was...
Which is it? 7, 7.5.
I'm going to give it a 7.31. I think I'll go in between. Okay? So, yeah, I recommend going to the theater. It's a lot of fun to watch. It's a good summer flick. It is a blockbuster. I don't think if you're a hardcore Trekkie... You might not be happy with
and
what
I
you
think
see,
it's a little heavier content than emotionally than the other two for some reason, because, you know, they allude to the fact that Kirk, with a K, he basically comes to the realization that he surpasses the age of his father, where he's like, man, I'm a year older than my old man. But that kind of saddened him a little bit. And so they have, like, a thing for his dad. And then, you know, Spock is, like, sad because the real Spock...
Passed away. Yeah, there's a complexity here. There's some sort of personal...
There's a lot of quiet
introspection.
Time.
Yeah. It is there. It's true. I like that.
Yeah.
I did. When I think back, there's a lot of things I do really like about the film.
Mm-hmm.
And I might like it more on subsequent viewings of it.
Oh, yeah. It's definitely a nighttime go-to-sleep DVD experience. Like, I'll feel comfortable going to sleep to that movie.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one you know you liked.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's comforting. I can go to bed.
Right on. Thank you for your insight, Daph J. Thank you for coming back to the show and having all your fans who've been awaiting you to come back.
Sorry, guys. I've just been doing a lot of
history researching,
backhanding tennis. Yeah, I've been doing stuff.
And we should do a episode discussing those books that you've read from the graphic novels from John Lewis.
Oh my goodness, the three-part series.
We should go through those.
So good. That's heavy, though. That's heavy. Some heavy stuff.
It's okay.
I'm not apologizing. I'm just saying.
We're going to boldly go where no one's gone before with podcasts. We're going to go all over the place. We're going to explore. We're going to discuss, discover all this stuff. Star Trek Beyond. Thank you for coming.
Star Trek Express. Star Trek Express.
Sounds like a fast food place. All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. If you want to give us your review on Star Trek, please, we welcome it. Tell us why you hate it. Tell us why we're crazy. Tell us...
why you love us.
Tell us why
Oh my goodness, it's all about optimism here.
Yeah.
Come on.
But I want to hear from the Trekkies.
Positive.
Well, you can always write in and send a review to iTunes. It's very much appreciated. It helps spread the word of the show, gets it out there for more fans. If you want to read Star Trek comics, which do exist, and some of them I hear are very good, go to Cyber City Comics. They've got them there. If you want to hit us up, go to caveofsolitude@outlook.com or our website at caveofsolitude.com. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will be back with episode 50 very soon. Talk to you later.
So wait a minute. That's a stupid question. Did the comic book... Did the TV happen... First,
yes.
And then
yes,
the comic?
Yes,
oh, okay, yes. So it spun off of the
film. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Would you read Star Trek comics if Batman was in it?
Yeah.
Do you know that they did a crossover between Star Trek and Green Lantern? Like their paths cross? Yeah,
no.
They did a comic
book. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. Did you read that one?
Haven't read it yet. I'll read it maybe in like a collected edition.
That's cool.
Yeah. That piqued my interest.
I'll read with any Batman in it. As long as he's not whoring around with Barbara Gordon in bed. I can't believe they did that. I don't like that. Honestly, I don't think I'm going to watch it.
Yeah.
On principle. Listen, I don't want to give them any dollar to make them think that what they did was a good idea.
Buy it in the used bucket. Like when it's like returned because it was used.
No, not even.
But then it's not tracked, right? They don't know, like, hey, this sale is being made. Like,
no, yeah, but it's not on principle. I don't think I want to... That's crazy that they would do that. I don't like that at all.
Yeah. I'm a little bit... I'm crushed. It sounds dramatic, but I'm like... I think it's because I was really looking forward to this movie. Because it's a good joke. You know? It's classic. And it was Mark Hamill. Kevin Conroy back.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That was... To me, that's the selling point.
Yeah.
And to have to...
They ruined it. No, it's ruined. I don't like it.
That's it?
Yeah. Five thumbs down.
Five thumbs. If anybody had five thumbs to put down, they need to be put
down.
Because
if it took five thumbs, that means...
Two thumbs up is what
you
get.
No. Wait. Let me do the math here. So, 2, 4.
Yeah.
So, it's roughly 3 people already that don't like it. If you give it a 5 thumbs down. Because you need 3 people to give you that many thumbs.
Why don't you just give it 6 thumbs down for emphasis? Everybody's thumb gets used. There isn't
because one... I thought of 5, because I thought of 5 fingers. And then I said thumbs, and I was trying to save it, but you ruined it.
I didn't ruin it. Who gives 5 thumbs down?
I just didn't. I tried to save it. And like I said, you ruined it. You have to get all technical. Why don't you just give it a 6 and make it a full 6?
Well, then all 3 people are involved. There's that one last person with one thumb here. It's like,
well,
what do I do with this one? Stick it on my butt? Like,
you did say that some people were kind of on the fence about it. They were chafing on the fence.
So you're one thumb up, one thumb down. That's your rating.
I'm conflicted. You see what it's